one of those times when the first and third readings are clearly complementary, where you have the same notion. I'm thinking about the centrality of what is religion. And this, in the history of the Jews, was expressed primarily by that strange group of people called the prophets. Now, at the time of Jesus, there hadn't been prophets for 500 years. And the books of the prophets, which had become part of the official Jewish script at that time, had become almost magical, as religious stuff tends to be. Become almost magical, like scapulars or holy water or gourd water or all this kind of stuff. So that you get prophets understood primarily as predictors of the future, seers. That's not at all what classical prophecy was among the Jews. Not at all. The word itself, prophet, says what they're about, namely somebody who speaks for somebody else. So the prophets are those people whom the Jews thought were speaking for God and saying what needed to be said, given their own historical moment. They were not talking about some vague, distant future. They were talking about the world that they inhabited. And as I said, the kind of continuous stimulus of the prophetic voice was to keep religion alive. What do I mean by that? All religions take on all kinds of human accoutrements, huh? Holy places, holy buildings, holy books, holy people, holy jobs, holy institutions. And for whatever reason, there is this kind of heaviness in all that human dimension of religion, which often enough tend to occlude what religion is supposed to be about. To put it another way, all of those things, whether dogmatic definitions or moral codes or liturgy or sacred books, have their usefulness only insofar as they lead people to the heart of religion, which is expressed in this little statement. What I want is love, not sacrifice. Knowledge of God rather than Holocaust. So what Hosea is saying, of course, is juxtaposing this central aspect of Jewish religiosity, namely the whole sacrificial system, which was central, and pointing out just exactly the impulse that I started talking about, that fidelity to all those humanly devised religious forms can, in fact, eclipse what religion is supposed to do, supposed to be. And, of course, Jesus stands in the prophetic tradition. What I want is mercy. Religion, in a word, has to do with life. Real, human, lived life. And to change the way you deal with each other. The way you look at the world. And although we surround it with this impulse, as we have to, we can't get away from it. We are human beings who need bodily expressions of stuff. So we have to have all this holy stuff. But it's certainly clear, and a perennial problem of religion, that all that holy stuff, instead of facilitating the movement into that depth where we are transformed into people who love, who are merciful. Rather, as in the case of the Pharisees in Matthew's somewhat caricatured picture of them, to self-righteous, priggish, narrow, exclusivist characters who know too much about what's good, true, and beautiful, godly. And of course, we Romans Christians who've been around so long have this enormous closet of form, more than anybody. So the danger, in a certain real sense, is greater for us. And the danger becomes even more perilous when we want to sustain those forms at the cost of genuine religiosity. That is this terrible case of mistaken identity. What is truly religious? Again, these are thoughts in due season, I think, given the state of the church today. Last night on the internet again, CNET News Service, the View from Rome, is ready to tell us that all those anti-Catholics who are blackening the reputation of the church today, all those secular news people, Vatican officials, want to make it very clear that who is the enemy in the pedophilia. Or it's the homosexual, they're being beat on again. Or it's seminary training. Just a word about seminary training. I was in three seminaries for a period of 8.5 years. If there's any place on the face of the earth where this danger that I'm talking about is firmly in place, it's in the seminary. Where every moment of your day is bound in, contained by a set of rules which are then identified as the will of God, and you live, this is no exaggeration, under a constant regime of fear, matching those expectations. And everything I read about seminary reformation today, you know, we got to have more surveillance, we got to have more tests, we got to have more examinations. Got to have a finer filter. Well, yes, but the way this is set up right now just means that the powers of fear inducement are even going to be stronger in the seminary, and we're going to get people who are a bunch of ecclesiastical bureaucrats, even more than we have right now, I'm afraid. So we have this terrible job to look further, to look beyond, to look deeper. To always ask the question, does this conduce to my conversion? Does this dogma, does this ritual, does this text? I don't mean to say that there's some kind of neat progression. But if the question dies, we can be absolutely certain that the religious impulse will die as well. So we're left with the urgency to keep asking, to keep looking, to keep asking God to keep us from ossifying, petrifying our ideas of what religion is about and who is religious. I want mercy, not sacrifice. I want love, knowledge of the Lord, rather than holocaust.